You know, you are staring at a hospital discharge paper, and it is maybe 2 in the morning. And the social worker just told you that you have exactly 48 hours to find a safe place for your dad to live.
Right. That is just so common.
Yeah. Or, well, maybe your mom has been living with you. And as you sit at the kitchen table in the quiet of the night, you are just hit with this crushing realization. Her dementia has progressed past the point where you can actually keep her safe anymore.
It is a terrifying moment.
It really is. And the wrong choice right now, I mean, it could completely bankrupt your family.
Right.
Or seriously compromise their health. I am your host, and as editors for California Care Compass, we know this is the exact moment families just freeze in panic.
Oh, absolutely. It is arguably one of the most stressful transitions a family can go through. I mean, you are exhausted, you are scared, and suddenly you are forced to learn this completely foreign vocabulary overnight.
Right, exactly. All the jargon.
Yeah. Words like assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory care are just thrown around as if you should instinctively know the difference.
Like, it's just common knowledge.
Right. And to an untrained ear, they all sound like, you know, variations of the exact same thing. But they are entirely different universes, especially when it comes to the actual care provided, the massive costs involved, and the regulatory oversight.
And that is exactly why we are doing this deep dive today. Our mission with this analysis of the source text, assisted living, memory care, or nursing home, sorting it out is to act as a sort of decoder ring, specifically for California families who are navigating this labyrinth for the very first time.
We really want to lower the temperature in the room, just sort out these care options logically.
Exactly. But before we get into the weeds, we have to establish the core philosophy of our source material. You are not just choosing a building. You really have to put the real estate out of your mind.
Yeah, that is so crucial.
Right. What you are actually doing is matching a specific level of care to a person's specific daily needs.
And, you know, that framing changes everything. I mean, if you start your search by looking at glossy brochures of beautiful dining rooms, you are going to get completely distracted.
Oh, for sure. The fancy chandeliers.
Exactly. You get distracted by amenities that have absolutely nothing to do with medical safety or quality of life. The physical building is completely secondary.
Well, okay, let's unpack this. Because if we are trying to match care to needs rather than architecture, it means we have to stop looking at the buildings.
Yeah.
And we need to start looking closely at the specific licenses the state issues to them.
Right. The licensing is everything.
To help visualize this, I always think about the difference between a cruise ship and a hospital. An assisted living facility feels a lot like a cruise ship that just happens to have a very good safety net built in.
That is a great way to look at it.
Yeah. You have your own private cabin. There's a robust social calendar. They cook your meals. Mm. And, you know, someone is always nearby if you stumble. But if you have a massive heart attack, the cruise ship crew cannot perform open heart surgery.
Yeah.
A skilled nursing facility, on the other hand, is basically a floating hospital. It is a clinical environment completely focused on medical intervention rather than hospitality.
That analogy perfectly captures the functional divide. I mean, the state licensing tells you exactly what kind of ship you are boarding. Let us look at assisted living first.
Okay, let's do it.
So in California, these are officially classified as residential care facilities for the elderly. And the absolute crucial detail here is that they are licensed and monitored by the California Department of Social Services.
Oh, wow. So they are governed by social services, not health services.
Exactly.
That seems like a massive distinction for families to understand right out of the gate.
It is the defining distinction, really. Because they fall under the California Department of Social Services, the primary focus is social care and residential support.
Right.
The staff is there around the clock to help residents with what the industry calls activities of daily living, or ADLs.
Which, I mean, that can sound like a lot of bureaucratic jargon. How do we break that down into practical terms for people?
Well, the easiest way to think about it is separating the body from the environment. Activities of daily living are things you do with your physical body.
Okay, like what?
This includes basic self-care tasks like bathing, getting dressed, grooming, using the toilet, or, you know, moving safely from a bed to a wheelchair.
Got it. So very hands-on personal care.
Yes. And then you have instrumental activities of daily living, which are things you do to navigate your external environment.
Okay, so that would be what? Like paying bills?
Exactly. Managing a complex checkbook, coordinating transportation to a doctor, or handling medication schedules. The staff at an assisted living facility can remind a resident to take a pill or even hand them a pre-sorted cup of pills.
But they cannot give them a shot.
Right. They generally cannot administer a needle injection or manage highly complex medical equipment like a breathing ventilator.
That makes a lot of sense. And we cannot ignore the social mechanism at play here either, because loneliness is a massive health risk for seniors. Isolation can be just as dangerous as a physical ailment.
Oh, absolutely. It is a huge factor.
And these residential facilities are fundamentally designed to combat that isolation. They have a highly structured calendar of group activities. Mm-hmm. We're talking about exercise classes, movie nights, group outings.
Yeah, the socialization is a major benefit.
I mean, for someone who has been trapped alone in a two-story house, moving into a communal setting can be incredibly life-affirming.
It really can. Now, contrast that residential model with skilled nursing facilities, which most people, you know, just call nursing homes.
Right, the nursing home.
These are licensed and strictly regulated by the California Department of Public Health. And what's fascinating here is how knowing the regulating agency immediately reveals the facility's true purpose.
Because it is public health.
Exactly. The California Department of Public Health oversees these buildings because they are fundamentally healthcare facilities. The word skilled is your primary clue. It refers specifically to skilled nursing or intensive therapy services that legally can only be performed by a licensed medical professional.
So the cruise ship staff has been basically replaced by registered nurses and clinical therapists.
Right. You have registered nurses, licensed vocational nurses, and certified nursing assistants on duty 24 hours a day.
Wow. Around the clock.
Around the clock. They are actively managing complex wound care, intravenous therapy, injections, and intensive daily physical therapy.
Okay, so who typically needs that level of care?
Well, there are generally two pathways that lead a person to a skilled nursing facility. The first is for short-term rehabilitation. Imagine your dad has a severe stroke. He stabilizes and leaves the acute hospital, but his body is incredibly weak.
Right. He cannot just go back to his house.
No, not at all. He needs intense daily physical and occupational therapy to relearn how to swallow or walk before he can safely go back home.
That makes sense. But the second reason is for people who are, well, they're not going to get better, right?
Unfortunately, yes. The second reason is for long-term custodial care. This is for individuals with highly complex, overlapping chronic medical conditions who need clinical supervision indefinitely.
So their medical needs have just simply eclipsed what a residential assisted living facility can legally or safely handle.
Exactly. And the environment here is profoundly clinical. Residents typically share a room, and the daily rhythm of life is dictated by medical routines, you know, vital sign checks and medication rounds, rather than social events.
Okay, so a skilled nursing facility fixes the broken hip, and an assisted living facility helps with daily mobility. I understand that physical divide completely. But what happens when mom's body is perfectly healthy, but she is putting the television remote in the microwave?
Ah, right. Cognitive decline.
Yeah. I mean, neither of those facilities seems equipped to handle someone whose primary challenge is cognitive rather than physical.
And that dilemma is exactly why the specialized world of memory care was created.
But I want to push back on the architecture of memory care for a second.
Okay, sure.
If dementia and Alzheimer's are such devastating, highly specialized diseases, why is a memory care unit usually just a single locked floor or a secured wing inside a standard assisted living building?
That is a fair question.
I mean, if it is so specialized, why isn't it a completely standalone hospital?
Well, the reason it is not a hospital is that while dementia severely damages the brain, it does not necessarily require acute medical interventions, like those IV drips or surgical wound care we talked about earlier.
Oh, I see.
The primary need is for a highly modified physical environment and specialized behavioral support. That is why memory care is almost always a dedicated secure neighborhood within a larger assisted living community.
So it is still under the social model?
Critically, yes. It is still licensed by the California Department of Social Services, because the focus remains on daily living support rather than clinical medicine.
But surely they cannot just, you know, put a keypad on a door, slap a memory care sign on the wall, and call it a day.
No, definitely not.
How does the actual physical space work to support a failing brain?
The space actually has to be engineered from the ground up to accommodate neurological decline. For example, dementia slowly destroys the brain's spatial mapping capabilities.
Okay. What does that mean for walking around?
Well, if you or I walk down a hallway and hit a dead end, we just turn around. We have a mental map of how to get back. But a person with advanced dementia cannot form that mental map. To them, a dead-end hallway is a terrifying neurological trap.
Oh, wow. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. They do not know how they got there or how to escape, which triggers extreme anxiety and catastrophic panic attacks.
That sounds awful.
It is. To solve this, memory care architecture relies heavily on circular hallways. Residents can wander safely and continuously without ever hitting a wall that causes them to panic.
That makes total sense. So the building itself is acting as a behavioral intervention.
Exactly.
And the staff training has to go far beyond just standard hospitality.
Right. Absolutely. The staff are highly trained in dementia communication and behavioral redirection. They do not argue with a resident who is insisting they need to go pick up their kids from school, even though those kids are now in their 50s.
Because arguing just makes it worse.
Arguing only causes distress. Instead, the staff learns to validate the emotion behind the delusion, and then they gently redirect the resident's attention to a calming task.
Which brings up the daily activities in these units. I noticed the source material mentions things like folding towels or arranging fake flowers.
Yes, those are very common.
On the surface, that sounds a little like busy work. Does that actually help someone with Alzheimer's?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it is not about the laundry at all. It is about tapping into deeply ingrained procedural muscle memory. A person might not remember their own name, but their hands remember the rhythmic, repetitive motion of folding a towel.
That is fascinating.
Giving them a basket of warm laundry to fold provides a massive dopamine hit of purpose and accomplishment. It reduces agitation organically without the use of heavy sedative medications. You are creating a safe, highly structured reality that they can still successfully process.
Knowing the right level of care provides a ton of clarity.
Mm-hmm.
But here's where it gets really interesting. And by interesting, I mean, this is the part that keeps families staring at the ceiling at 3 a.m.
The money.
Let us talk about the payment puzzle. There is this massive, deeply ingrained assumption that because we pay taxes our whole lives, Medicare will just take care of everything when we get old.
Right.
Why does the government draw such an unforgiving line when it comes to long-term care?
That assumption is the single most devastating misconception families face. And finding out the truth is often a deeply traumatic shock. The easiest way to memorize the rule is this. Medicare pays for curing, but it does not pay for caring.
Curing, not caring.
Right. Medicare is health insurance designed to treat acute medical conditions. It pays for your doctor, your hospital bed, and your surgical procedures. It absolutely does not cover what the government defines as custodial care.
And custodial care is the bathing and dressing.
Yes. That daily assistance with bathing, dressing, and eating. Because assisted living and memory care provide custodial care rather than medical curing, Medicare pays absolutely nothing toward your monthly rent in those buildings.
Wait, so if Medicare covers nothing for assisted living, and a family does not have a massive pension or a long-term care insurance policy, what happens? Are they just out of luck?
Well, for the vast majority of people, assisted living is entirely private, pay out of pocket. You are liquidating savings or selling the family home.
That is just brutal.
It is. However, there is a very specific safety net for low-income residents called Medi-Cal, which is California's Medicaid program.
Okay, how does that work for assisted living?
The California Department of Healthcare Services manages a program called the Assisted Living Waiver. The explicit goal of this waiver is to keep medical-eligible individuals out of expensive nursing homes by paying for their care in an assisted living facility instead.
That sounds like a great solution.
It sounds great, but the mechanics of this program are notoriously difficult. You must require a high level of care, and your financial assets must be strictly limited. Furthermore, the state only funds a limited number of slots. Not all facilities are willing to accept the waiver, and the wait lists can literally take years.
Years. Wow. That is a tough reality check. So let us cross over to skilled nursing facilities. Since those are heavily medical clinical environments, I assume the payment structure shifts dramatically.
It shifts completely. Let us look at how the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services handles a skilled nursing stay. Remember our hypothetical dad who had a stroke? To trigger Medicare coverage, he must first have a qualifying hospital stay of at least 3 consecutive inpatient days. If he meets that requirement, Medicare will pay for his rehab in the skilled nursing facility, but only for a very limited time.
How limited are we talking?
They will cover the first 20 days in full. From day 21 to day 100, Medicare pays a portion, and the patient owes a hefty daily copayment.
And what happens on day 101?
On day 101, Medicare coverage drops to 0. It is a hard, unyielding stop. Medicare is strictly for short-term rehabilitation.
So if a family has a loved one with a chronic condition who needs to live in a skilled nursing facility for 5 years and their private savings run completely dry, do they just, you know, get evicted onto the street?
No, and this is where the system shifts again. Once a patient has spent down their personal assets to meet strict poverty limits, medical steps in as the primary payer for long-term custodial care in a nursing home.
Oh, I see.
Navigating that specific financial spend-down process is incredibly complex, but Medi-Cal is the ultimate safety net that keeps the majority of long-term residents in California nursing homes housed and medically supervised.
Because this entire landscape is just riddled with financial and medical landmines, diving in without a structured plan is a recipe for disaster. We need to give you a clear, step-by-step action plan for how to conduct this search.
The only way to survive this process is to remove the emotion and follow a logical sequence. Step one is securing a professional level of care assessment from a physician.
Okay, so talk to the doctor first.
Before you look at a single website or brochure, you need a doctor to evaluate your loved one's physical and cognitive deficits. That medical document is the absolute foundation of your search.
It tells you immediately whether you need the cruise ship or the hospital.
Exactly.
What is step two?
Step two is the hardest conversation you will have, the family financial audit.
Oh, the money talk.
Yeah, you have to lay all the cards on the table, identify every pension, every bank account, and the realistic equity in the family home. Knowing your exact budget constraints early prevents you from falling in love with a facility you literally cannot afford.
That makes total sense. And step three?
Step three is the research phase, and you must use the official state databases to do this.
Where specifically should people be looking to find accurate, unbiased information?
If you are looking for assisted living or memory care, you use the search tools provided by the California Department of Social Services. They provide licensing status and public complaint records.
And for nursing homes?
If you are looking for skilled nursing, you check the California Department of Public Health databases, and you absolutely must use the Care Compare tool managed by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. That federal tool grades nursing homes on a 5-star scale based on health inspections and staffing levels.
And for step five, I know the source material highlights a specific advocacy group.
Yes. Before making any final decisions, contact the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, which is funded by the California Department of Aging.
What exactly does an ombudsman do?
An ombudsman is a highly trained, independent advocate for residents. They physically visit these facilities constantly. They know the management, they know the hidden problems, and their guidance is completely free.
So what does this all mean for step four? I deliberately skipped step four, which is the physical tour of the building.
Right, the tour.
When a family finally walks through those front doors, they are going to be overwhelmed. What specific sensory details should they be looking for to separate a good facility from a bad one?
You really have to act like an investigator. First, analyze the smell. It should smell like a clean home. If it smells overwhelmingly like urine, that is a red flag for neglect.
Definitely.
But if it smells aggressively like industrial bleach or heavily perfumed air fresheners, they might be actively trying to mask a problem.
Oh, that is a great tip.
Then, listen to the baseline noise. Is it a chaotic environment with call bells ringing endlessly and alarms blaring? Or is there a calm, steady rhythm of staff interacting with residents?
You really have to look past the architecture and observe the human mechanics of the building.
Exactly. Look at the residents. Are they dressed cleanly and engaged in activities? Or are they just slumped in wheelchairs, staring blankly at a television in a hallway?
Right.
You must aggressively question the management about their staff-to-resident ratios and their employee turnover rate. This raises an important question you have to answer for yourself during every tour.
What is that?
What actually impacts your mother's daily joy and safety? Is it a luxurious, chandelier-lit lobby with a grand piano? Or is it the patience and warmth of the caregiver who is going to help her get out of bed every single morning?
The chandelier does not provide care.
No, it doesn't. The staff does.
We have covered massive ground today, from state licensing divisions and spatial mapping and memory care to the harsh realities of the Medicare cutoff. Now we want to distill everything down into our California Care Compass editorial take. We want to give you three highly specific, concrete tasks to complete this week to get this process started.
Action really is the antidote to anxiety. Task number one, call your loved one's primary care doctor this week and schedule that comprehensive level of care assessment.
Task number two, Gently start a shared folder with your siblings or family members and begin dropping in whatever financial documents you can easily find.
Right. Do not try to solve the budget yet. Just start gathering the data.
And task number three.
Task number three. Use the databases from the California Department of Social Services or the California Department of Public Health to find 3 to 5 licensed facilities within a 20-minute drive of your house. Just write the names down on a piece of paper.
So no calling them yet.
Do not call them. Do not schedule a tour. Just put the names on paper to turn this massive, terrifying, abstract problem into a manageable project.
Our editorial advice for you is simple. Let the doctor's medical assessment be your absolute compass. Let the medical reality dictate the level of care required, and every other decision will naturally fall into place.
It is a grueling process, but by taking it one logical step at a time, you can navigate this successfully. Having the correct mechanical knowledge of how these systems operate empowers you to make these profound choices out of logic and love rather than operating out of sheer panic.
As we close out this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought to consider. We spend so much energy analyzing the medical capabilities and the financial ruin associated with these facilities. But think about the profound psychological impact of the space itself.
Yes.
How does the physical environment we inhabit in our final years shape our very identity? When the walls around us change from a vibrant family home to a clinical, sterile room, how does that architecture alter our sense of who we are at the very end of our story?
It is a powerful lens through which to view these spaces. It is something to keep in the back of your mind as you walk those hallways.
Be sure to join us for our next deep dive, where we will explore the subtle, easily missed signs that indicate it is time to transition a loved one out of a standard assisted living environment and into a dedicated memory care unit. Until next time, take care of yourselves and your families.